you weren't here last week, you can catch it online. And today we're going to deal with Psalms of Lament. And to me, this is probably one of the most authentic portions of the Psalms, is the Psalms of Lament. And the reason for that is there's a couple of reasons. One, I'm a pastor, and so we do funerals, we're involved in people's lives, and I hear the pain and the suffering and the sorrow that goes on. I'm a human being with a cell phone, so I tune into the world around me and I see the pain and the suffering and the anguish and the war and the injustice, as we talked about last week. And so it raises questions. I grew up in church. Now, most of my church upbringing didn't really talk a lot about this. It was more of the name it and claim it and everything's good and God's going to bless you if you follow him. And kind of like, if you live right and you do right, then you'll be blessed by God and everything will be good. And it's kind of like, you know, the if and thou formula. So if you do this, then that. You do this, then that. The reality is, as I found as I've grown through my faith and grown throughout the years, is that it's not always quite that simple. That I've watched many people who have followed God and dedicated their lives to him, and just on the outside anyways, have done incredible things and loved Jesus and have seen destruction and death and heartache and sorrow. And I've seen people try and ignore it, and I've seen people embrace it, which is what we're going to talk about today. The interesting thing about the Psalms of Lament is that they are actually, in the book of Psalms, the most plentiful Psalms. Now, you would think if you read through the Psalms, and we're going to come back to these next week, the Psalms of Praise and Thanksgiving, you would think, because we talk a lot about that, we write songs about that, you would think that most of the Psalms are about praise and thanksgiving, but the reality is that over half the Psalms are actually classified as Psalms of Lament. The rest of them are Psalms of Praise, Thanksgiving, and Psalms of Wisdom, and Psalms, imprecatory Psalms that we talked about last week. So the majority of the Psalms are actually Psalms of Lament. Isn't that fascinating? At least I think it's fascinating. The reason why I think it's fascinating is because for many of us, this is the real issue in our life. And we spend tons of money, tons of time, tons of thought, tons of energy trying to avoid this at times. Because we don't like pain, we don't like suffering, we don't like grieving. We want the good in life, we want God's blessing. But it's interesting that Jesus didn't say, come to me and everything will be great, did he? He said in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, come to me all who are weary and burdened. It's interesting that Jesus didn't say, come to me and I will give you everything that you asked for, although we will talk a little bit about that later. But in Luke chapter 9, verse 23, he says, then he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and daily follow me. There's this tension that we live in this broken world, and we will experience, if you haven't already, pain, suffering, discomfort, injustice. And the question is, well, what do we do about that? Because some people say we don't do anything. You avoid it. You don't talk about it. You bury it. Like we talked about last week, you put your head in the sand. And I would argue, no, probably not the best way to handle it. Now, there's two types of Psalms of Laments in the book of Psalms. There's the communal lament. So that's when, as a community, you'll read the psalm and it's kind of like all people are getting together and they're kind of lamenting to God. They're complaining to God. They're saying, God, look at what's happening. God, hear us. We're broken. This is what's wrong. This is the situation. And as a community, they get together and say, hey, God, you need to do something. And then there are the personal laments, which is when an author, David or somebody else, writes and says, hey, God, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. Would you do something? Would you help me get through this? Would you deal with my sorrow? Would you deal with my pain? Will you heal me? Will you help me? This is what's going on, God. This is what's happening. And so I'd like to just begin this morning by reading two of these psalms. I want to start with a short one and then a little bit of a longer one. In Psalm chapter 8, verses 1 and following, it says this. Psalm 6, sorry, not 8. In John 6, it says, Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. Have mercy, O Lord, for I am faint. Heal me, Lord, for my bones are in agony. Ever had your bones in agony? My soul is in deep anguish. How long? How long? How long? Turn, Lord, and deliver me. Save me because of your unfailing love. Among the dead, no one proclaims your name. Who praises you from the grave? He's looking death in the face. I am worn out from my groaning. You ever been so sick or just grieving so you're just tired of it? You've had enough? All night long I flood my bed with weeping and drench my couch with tears. My eyes grow weak with sorrow. They fail me because of my foes. Away from me, all who do evil, for the Lord has heard my weeping. The Lord has heard my cry for mercy. The Lord accepts my prayer. All my enemies will be overwhelmed with shame and anguish. They will turn back and suddenly be put to shame. Psalm 6. How about Psalm, a little bit further on, Psalm 86. Hear me, Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Guard my life, for I am faithful to you. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Have mercy on me, for I call out to you all day long. Bring joy to your servant, Lord. You are forgiving and good, abounding in love in all who call on you. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for mercy. When I am in distress, I call you because you answer me. Among the gods, there is none like you. No deeds can compare with yours. All the nations you have made will come and worship before you, Lord, for they will bring glory to your name, for great and marvelous are your deeds. You alone are God. Teach me your way that I may rely on your faithfulness. Give me an undivided heart that I may bear your name or fear your name. I will praise you, Lord, my God, with all my heart. I will glorify your name forever, for great is your love towards me. You have delivered me from the depths, from the realm of the dead. Arrogant foes are attacking me, O God. Ruthless people are trying to kill me, but they have no regard for you. But you, Lord, are gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. Turn to me and have mercy on me. Show your strength on behalf of your servant. Save me because I serve you just as my mother did. Give me a sign of your goodness that my enemies may see it and put to shame, for the Lord have helped me and comforted me. Psalms of Lament. King David, if you read through the story of King David, who wrote many of these, he's like a superhero. This is the guy that, if you remember, he slew Goliath with a couple of pebble stones. This is the guy that delivered Israel from his enemies. This is the guy who made Israel an amazing superpower in that whole area at that time. This is a guy, a king that many people look up to. This is a guy who it says that was a man after God's own heart. And yet as you read through the Psalms, you find these Psalms about David pouring out his heart, about God, deliver me from my enemies. I am grieving. I'm full of sorrow. I'm full of pain. I'm full of anguish. I'm facing death right in the face. God. Here's a couple of principles about these Psalms that help us today. And the first one is it's okay to be honest. You know, I think one of the problems in our society and Western culture is that we've learned how to be very fake. How are you doing? Great! Even though your husband just passed away 3 days ago. It's kind of that natural reaction, right? And there's a bunch of reasons. They're kind of coping mechanisms or defense mechanisms, right? How are you doing? Great! Because if I say anything other than great or good, then we're going to have a conversation that actually has some depth to it. And I'm not sure whether I have the time, the energy, or the vulnerability, or the authenticity to actually really want to have that conversation. Because often, those conversations are really, really awkward. So what do you say when somebody says, hey, how's your day going? Well, not so good. I just lost my husband. There's the Pat and Christian response and come up with some sort of explanation as to, well, he's in a better place. But to deal with that grief, that conversation, it's not easy. Now, maybe it's not that extreme. Maybe you just lost a job. Something financially happened. Something happened with your children. There was a divorce and What do you say when your sister or your brother or your parent or somebody comes and says, well, we're finished? So how are you doing? Not so good. My husband walked away this week. Those are hard conversations. And so in Western culture, because we like to be in control, because we're individualistic, and because we like to be our own, you know, kind of every, when we ask those questions, it's the great, good, fantastic, everything's okay, when inside everything might be falling apart. Or the other thing is, we just don't want to actually have to deal with it ourselves either. So I'm doing great because I want to take this grief, this sorrow, this pain, this injustice, and I want to bury it, and I don't want to talk about it, because if I bury and talk about it, I'm not going to have to deal with it. And it's just going to kind of go away. Now, the reality is, if you talk to any psychologist, is that it doesn't go away. And if you don't grieve, if you don't mourn, if you're not authentic, if you don't have conversations, if you don't talk about these things, it's going to fester inside of you. And it will come out in other ways. And so one of the amazing authentic things about these Psalms, I think, is that David, in his authenticity, is honest with those around him, and more importantly, he's honest with God. God is big enough to take any of your complaints, any of your struggles, any of your grief, any of your rolling, like, God, why? It's okay. David illustrates this and shows us that it's okay to be honest. In Psalm 6, he's in deep anguish. His bones are in agony. He's worn out from his groaning. His eyes grow weak with sorrow. He's just pouring out to God, here's what's going on in my life. Right now, God, life stinks. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. Will you do something about it? He's being honest. Matt moved from Minnesota, this is not me, this is another Matt I came across this week, to Long Island in New York as a pastor. And he met a Jewish fellow of Jesus Christ who started coming to his church. And this young man would come up, and he was from New York, and Matt wasn't from New York. And every Sunday, after the pastor would teach his sermon, this New Yorker would come up, and he would say, great message, pastor. But then he would start to say, but, and have this long argument already ruled about what this pastor just said. So the pastor, in good, being good nature, was like, well, okay. So thank you, and off he goes. This happened Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. Finally, the pastor, Matt, broke it one Sunday. Finally had enough. He finally, what's the deal? Don't you get anything out of my sermons? I couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand it anymore. Doesn't God tell you something? Why are you always nitpicking some minor point of theology? Finally, David was his name, broke the silence. He laughed. He said, well, maybe I should explain a little bit about my cultural background, which is probably different from your ethnic background. We're New Yorkers, like Jews like me, we're expecting you to fire back when we have, this is how we have conversations. So I want to come to you, I want to present a case, but I want you to talk back to you. I want you to fire back to me. I want to have this conversation with you. I want to talk about this. I want to intensely dialogue about this. Now, for my wife and I and my family, we've lived in Israel, so we've experienced this. In Israel, everything is loud. Everybody's arguing and fighting with themselves. It seems like it's just like it's absolute chaos sometimes because that's their culture. But I kind of like it because there's this honesty and this rawness that we don't have in our culture, I would say, at all. And the cool thing about David is that he comes to God and he's not hesitant to be honest. Say, God, I'm breaking. I'm falling apart. This is what's going on. I mean, you read through all these lament. There's enemies at the gates. I don't know whether I'm going to live. They're going to kill me. They're going to take me away. I'm sick. I need healing. And there's just, you read through, there's all these psalms and lament about what's going on in David's life. And he's so honest and so authentic before God. It's almost refreshing. God can take the tough conversations. He can take the challenges and the struggles that you face day in and day out. Now, you might not get answers. You might not get healing. You might not get deliverance. You're still going to have to go through the process of whatever God's taking you through. But God is big enough that we can be honest before him and share our hurt, share our pain, share our struggles. Not easy. But this is what authenticity is all about. And then every imprecatory psalm, psalm of lament isn't just about the author being honest, but it's also about the author then, once they've been honest, the pattern is they're honest. God, this is the problem. This is what's going on. This is how I'm hurting. This is the sorrow. This is the agony. These are the enemies. And then there's a petition. There's an asking of God to do something. Matthew chapter 7, verse 8. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, the door will be opened. So yes, Jesus didn't come to answer and give us everything that we ask for, but he did come to heal us, to restore us. That when we seek him, when we are honest before him, when we pour out our heart before him, we can ask him for anything. Sometimes he'll give it, sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll say yes, sometimes he'll say no, sometimes he won't answer, and sometimes he'll just say, wait. But we can ask. Because God is full of mercy. He's full of grace. The psalmist says right here, turn to me, heal me in my agony, in my aching, in my bones. Do something, God, heal me. It doesn't tell us what exactly happened. But he's being honest and he's asking, he's petitioning before God, God, would you do something in my life? Luke chapter 11, verse 10, for everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, the one who knocks, the door will be open. In Matthew chapter 17, verse 20, and in 21 and 22, or 21 and 21, so twice in the book of Matthew, he says this, because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Jesus comes along and he says, and he raises the value, says, hey, ask anything. Be honest before God and don't be afraid to ask and say, God, once this is what's going on in my life, I've lost this, I'm dealing with this, I'm grieving through this, I'm processing this, I need your healing. God, this is what I need you to do. In your timing, in your will, would you do something? Travel back 200 years in Christian history to John Newton, the slave trader turned pastor and hymn writer. He would receive the most unbelievable answers to his prayers because he believed in what he called large asking. When explaining what that meant, Newton would often cite a legendary story of a man who asked Alexander the Great to give him a huge sum of money in exchange for his daughter's hand in marriage. Alexander agreed and told the man to request of Alexander's treasurer whatever he wanted. So the father of the bride went and asked for an enormous amount. The treasurer was startled and said that he could not give out that kind of money without checking and without a direct order. Going to Alexander, the treasurer argued that even a small fraction of the money requested would be more than enough to serve the purpose. No, replied Alexander, let him have it all. I like this fellow. He does me honor. He treats me like a king and proves by me what he asks that he believes me to be both rich and generous. Newton concluded, in the same way, we should go to the throne of God's grace and present petitions that express an honorable view of the love, the riches, and the bounty of our king. Large asking. When you're facing pain, sorrow, loss, grief, when you're struggling, are you honest before God? Are you asking him for the big things? God, would you heal me? Well, I'm not sure whether God really... God, would you heal? God, would you provide the resources and the finances that I need for this particular situation? Well, I don't know whether God's... What are you asking for from God? Every Psalms of Lament has an honesty about them, a petition, and then a declaration that God will prevail. It's a step of faith. That once you've prayed and you're like, God, this is where I'm at. I'm being honest. I'm being transparent. I'm being authentic. Here's what I need you to do, God. And then there's an expectation that, God, I'm going to trust you that you are going to do what's best. God has heard my cry, he says. He accepts my prayer. God overwhelmed my enemies with shame and anguish. These are the type of words that you'll hear as you read through these psalms, because the psalmist who writes them is honest and authentic and asks God to do something, and then he trusts that God will do something. And isn't that what our faith is about? Now, maybe he might answer our prayers differently, but God will do something. Maybe God has a bigger plan than what we can see for our pain and our suffering, and he's going to use it in a way that's going to be profound and experienced for somebody else, or maybe in our own lives or for our spouses or whatever else it is. We don't know how God's going to answer our prayer, but we trust that he will answer and do the best thing for your life, lives of those around us. And as crazy as it may sound, our society and the world as well too. There was a Muslim who came to faith in Athens, Greece. Athens is part of the refugee highway where people from around the world pass through the road to a better life. In May 2006, one of the missionaries in Athens, Kyle Safi, reported what happened to an Iranian man as he identified as M, so to keep his name secret. In 2003, everything M knew was destroyed in an earthquake measuring 7.45 on the Richter scale. He was tortured by the question of why something like this would ever happen, a natural disaster. M went to live with relatives in Afghanistan, was married, and had a daughter, but was still filled with despair. Leaving his family behind, M headed to the West and ended up in Athens staying with some relatives. Though he and his family were Muslim, M became interested in Christianity, finding himself strangely moved by the sight of the crosses he saw decorating the Orthodox churches in the city. M was given a Bible and he started reading it. Since his relatives forbid such a thing, M used a teeny flashlight to read during the night after his uncles were asleep. He studied the Bible this way for 2 years. Finally, M realized God was calling him to be born again. He contacted the Refugee Ministry Center, declaring his faith for Christ and asking for some more information. On Sunday, May 7th, 2006, M set his alarm for 6 a.m. He wanted to spend time reading his Bible and praying that morning because on that day he was going to get baptized into a fellowship with other Iranian believers. But M's cousin had discovered this plan. Before M's alarm went off, the cousin poured boiling water all over M while he was sleeping, scalding both his thighs and his one arm. What would you do? M came to the baptism service anyways. Standing before those gathered with his burns on his arms clearly visible, M declared, "No matter what they do to me, I will love Jesus." After the baptism, M said he felt like standing in the center of the city of Athens and shouting to everybody, "I belong to Jesus Christ." The reason why I tell a story like that is because God's will prevail. For the people that are working in that area, 2 years he read his Bible. 2 years those people working with him. No results, not knowing what's going on. And then he becomes a Christian. Be honest with God. Ask, petition, and trust that God knows what he's doing. And watch the incredible things that he does. So what do you do with this week? Here's a couple questions to ask ourselves. Are you being honest? Now, that honesty goes two ways, with those around you and honest with God. Sometimes it's easier to be honest with God and not honest with those around us, and sometimes it's easier to be honest with those around us and not honest with God. But I think it's important that we're honest with both, because this is what authentic living is all about. And this is actually what living in community is all about, too. When you're struggling and you're going through a difficult time, that's what the church is for. When things are falling apart, everything's great and nobody knows, then how does the church pray? How do they step up to the plate and help financially or relationally or whatever it is that you need? Be honest. And if you're not honest with God, well, he knows anyways. But it's going to break your relationship with him. God doesn't want fake people. He wants real people. He wants you to be honest with him. He wants you to share both the joys of life and also the heartbreaks of life. He wants to hear the brokenness. Because we live in a broken world, and believe me, it breaks God's heart way more than it breaks yours and mine. Are you being honest with God? Are you asking? Now, in order to ask, you need time and you need a relationship to build with Jesus. And so are you praying? Are you spending time with God? Or do you wait for the fire in the house to all of a sudden go, God, I need your help? Are you asking? Are you living in relationship with him? And lastly, are you willing to trust? That in all of your quests and all of your authenticity and all of your honesty, are you willing to trust that God has brought you to this place, to this moment in your life and your time for a reason, even if you can't see it? And that God will take whatever pain, suffering, anguish that you're going through, and he will use it to not only bring wholeness and glory to his name, but also in your life as well. Let's pray. Maybe today you're going through struggle. If you were honest, this week has absolutely stunk. You're listening online and things haven't gone right, things have gone wrong, and not, we're not talking about the weather. We're talking about the bank account. We're talking about the relationships. We're talking about the sorrow, the grief, the anguish, the loss. And it's just left you without words. You can identify with David this morning. You're just tired of groaning. You're just tired. And that's okay. That's why Jesus gave us his Holy Spirit to minister and to breathe life into you. And Jesus said, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And rest is the greatest thing that he can give us in times of anguish and sorrow and grief. Rest in his peace. Rest in his love. Maybe you haven't been spending enough time praying. You need to carve out more time in your life to pray, to build that relationship so that you can ask and you can seek this Jesus, this God who loves you so deeply that he wants to be with you, that he wants to have conversation with you, that he wants to hear your thoughts and your petitions and your prayers. And so let it rip. Pour out your heart to God. And lastly, maybe it's the trust thing, where you're honest and you're transparent, you know it's, but you just, you're, God, do you really care? And it might not feel like it, and you might not be able to see it, but God cares deeply and loves you deeply and will move mountains for you even when you cannot see them, for his love is that great. And when our faith and when our trust in him begins to grow as a mustard seed, he can take our lives, our grief, our sorrow, and our lament, and he can turn it around and take our ashes and our mourning and our sorrow and turn it into dancing. Sometimes in this life, but if not in this life, then in the life to come. And we thank you and we praise you for that, Jesus. For these things we pray in your most holy and precious name, God. Amen.